You're on a GLP-1. Your appetite is changing, your cravings quiet down, and food noise is finally fading. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? How do I break through a plateau? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. The support designed to help you navigate what comes next. With trusted experts who guide you, food plans that work with your body, support to help manage side effects, plus access to GLP-1 medication. Weight Watchers Med Plus is designed to help you lose more weight. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board-certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today, I am interviewing SLP Laura Hayes from AAC Innovations. I found her originally on Instagram. She has a great Instagram page and a great website. I'm going to link those both in the show notes. Laura is an SLP with over 17 years experience in both the school and medical settings and specializes in augmentative communication experiences. We covered a lot in this interview. I had some ambitious questions for Laura because there was a lot I wanted to talk about. Using AAC effectively has always been an interest of mine, and I'm most definitely not an expert at. So there was a lot that I wanted to learn from Laura. We cover how to utilize AAC best in the classroom. We talk about stimming in AAC, how to deal with any myths and misconceptions from other educators and parents. I love that all of her advice is very practical, very actionable. She's seen it all, so she knows what's going to work and what's not, and what common obstacles might be as well. So let's jump in and hear from Laura Hayes. Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you on because I'm particularly excited about this topic. We've talked about AAC, I think, somewhat frequently on this podcast, but you're a true expert in this area. And I was telling Laura prior to the interview, I kept writing more and more questions because I kept thinking of more things to ask you.
It's such a big topic. So yep. I think let's just dive in.
Yes. So I personally feel like in the last even like, let's say 5-10 years, AAC has grown a lot in visibility. Like we're seeing teachers use AAC on Instagram and on Pinterest. I remember as a new teacher back in the day, I wasn't seeing that as much. And I think social media has helped a little bit. Are you seeing shifts in the field on how professionals understand and support AAC users, especially non-SLPs?
Definitely. I think that one of the biggest things that I always direct people back to is the era of 2010. It was 16 years ago, believe it or not. And I think, you know, when we look at that year, that was the birth and the introduction of the iPad. And I think that changed everything. I truly believe that is why things have become so more so much more mainstream, and why, you know, yes, now we have social media, Meta is out there, people have more information more readily available, but that shifted everything from being behind, you know, the curtain, if you will, right? Yeah. People had a market, things became more affordable, things became more mainstream once the birth of the iPad came. We slowly started to see dedicated devices that were behind insurance paywalls and barriers to getting evaluations, very formal, very lengthy evaluations, and it became way more accessible. You now have devices and apps that you can purchase same day, some of which are even free, and I think that makes a huge difference for our teams and families.
That's such a good point. And I actually was talking about this with my aunt on Friday. My cousin is 24 and he's an AAC user. And we were talking about him getting an iPhone because he originally had a Dynavox. And you know, those original Dynavoxes, they were like, you know, 36 pounds and clunky. Yep. He never, ever would use it. And once he got an iPhone, things really clicked for him, not only related to communication, but honestly related to literacy, because he wanted to text, he wanted a Snapchat, he wanted status updates. And it really, in a huge way, changed things for him.
And we might be jumping the gun a little bit in talking about this, but I think those are the things that when I talk to families that are hesitant to going the route of AAC, right? There's some level of grief with it. We want our kids to be able to talk to us. We want them to be able to fluidly communicate. But one of the things I think that needs to be brought to the table is this idea of we live in a technology-driven world and everyone communicates in different modalities. Everyone texts, yep. Everyone emails, everyone jumps on social media to provide captions. And so when we think about it, it's just a different form of communication. I think that we can look to that buy-in more readily. And if we even look at autistic self-advocates and AAC users themselves, they talk about how they readily have these tools available at their disposal so that they have communication for a variety of purposes, like you just mentioned in that personal example.
And you're right. I mean, we do live in this world where these types of communication modalities are so common. And I remember having that conversation with my aunt all of those years ago of like, your other kids that are teenagers, your teenage daughters, they're not picking up a phone and talking on the phone. They're texting. Like, this is how all of his peers are communicating. And man, I mean, what a time. Like, thank God for these devices and this technology, because it really is like changing people's lives.
I think that we just need to look at it differently, right? We have this information that's readily accessible. We have the next generation, if you will, telling us that things have shifted. And so I think we just need to follow suit.
What other kind of misconceptions or like hesitancies do you see with families and also educators when introducing AAC?
The biggest one we had just talked about, which is that it's going to prevent that speech development. I still, even though I feel like so many people preach it and the information is there, the research tells us this, it will not prevent speech development. In fact, it could enhance or support speech and language development. And it's still, even despite of that, it's one of the most persistent and most debunked myths that I kind of have to go back to, because families are concerned. Like I mentioned, there's a level of grief with seeing your child have difficulties with spoken or oral speech. And even some SLPs and educators, it's like this last resort. And once we get over that hump, I feel like so many more doors are open, but it is still the biggest thing. I also still see that if they can talk at all, then they don't need AAC. Maybe they can repeat words, or they are a gestalt language processor who can have some signs of echolalia. And so if they have any of those things, then they don't need AAC. And so I'm working with a lot of people to kind of show that AAC, the augmentative piece of AAC, right? It stands for augmentative and alternative communication. The augmentative piece is that portion of it fills the gap. It supports them when speech is unreliable or effortful, or they are dysregulated and they cannot access their spoken words. That it doesn't need to be an all or nothing. It can be a tool in our toolbox.
I think there is, yeah, still that mentality, like you said, of all or nothing and the last resort. Like when I do trainings oftentimes with preschool teachers or like very early childhood, it's like, oh, no, we don't have that yet. And it's like, well, I don't, maybe some of your kids could benefit from this.
If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find the right medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's a virtual psychiatric practice that actually fits your life and your insurance. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatric practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management. Unlike therapy-only sites, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means that you'll be seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when appropriate. All of their over 600 clinicians are in network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly out-of-pocket subscriptions or those out-of-network fees. Head to talkiatry.com/Sasha and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/Sasha to get matched in minutes. If you're someone who supports learners with autism, whether you're a special ed teacher, an RBT, or a parent who wants the very best for your child, high-quality applied behavior analysis training can make such a huge difference. If you've ever thought about deepening your expertise or advancing your ABA career, The Ohio State University has a program designed specifically for that. Ohio State offers a fully online Master's of Arts in Special Education with a specialization in applied behavior analysis. And what's really cool is the program is fully ABAI accredited, which means all of the coursework and the degree meet the requirement to pursue your BCBA and get that credential. This is a field that is continuing to grow. In fact, the job postings have increased by 102% in just 2 years for BCBAs. So the demand for highly trained ABA professionals is definitely there. And I love the flexibility that this gives you. There are so many workplace options as a BCBA. Now, I got my master's in ABA when I was a classroom teacher, so I appreciate that Ohio State has this flexible program. It's fully online. It's designed for working professionals, which back when I got my degree, there were not that many out there. So if you're currently a teacher or an RBT, this is a great opportunity to advance your knowledge while keeping your full-time job. So if you've been thinking about it, now is the time to do the research and learn about this program. Check out Ohio State's online ABA master's program. You can visit go.osu.edu/autismhelper. I'm going to link that in the show notes. That's go.osu.edu/autismhelper.
I think, too, just helping staff know that It's not going to hinder. In fact, it's probably going to help all of your students in the classrooms I support where they have full access to editing software or more robust apps on teacher device to be able to see language in action. We know that visuals support all of us, right? Think about how many times you're scrolling through your phone or you give yourself a visual reminder on a post-it. We know that that enhances our own cognitive linguistic abilities. Mm-hmm. So why would it not help everyone? And this idea of we have to have other things before we go to that tool in our toolbox, I think is just something we need to continue to squash, because so much of AAC is built through language connections and learning. And so there's not like a prerequisite list that we need for them to pass before we give them access. It's just even the idea that they have to learn a symbol, that idea of whether it be PECS or whether it be like four symbols before we fully open a device, that's not how language connections are made. That's not how language development works, right? We don't talk to a little baby and say, oh, now they say mama and dada. Now we can model cup, drink, eat, all done, right? We fluidly support them and we give them full access from the beginning. And so I think continuing to share that message is important too.
And you kind of touched on the next thing I wanted to ask about, you know, like a teacher device and modeling. Like these are all strategies that are really rooted in like the structure and setup of the classroom, which you can walk into a class and think, you know, right away, it's like, was the AAC device an afterthought or not? Or is it truly integrated into the room? What are some things that you've seen be successful on incorporating all of these strategies to create a very communicated, communication supportive environment?
So the term that I like to use with my teachers that I think really hits home for them is making language visible. How are we making language visible? So it's, again, not just a device. It's, do we have visuals across different areas of the classroom? Maybe they have some mid-tech switches at the doorway to say, I need to go, or around the bookshelves to say, it's time to read, let's read, or I need some help. Those are the kinds of things that I might see and use across the classroom. Do they have editing software for free on their smart board that they can project? But the idea, it's not just modeling. Yes, I want their AAC device. I want it out of the backpack. If it's still in the backpack, we've got to have access to it, right? But then if we have access to it, if access is not the issue, there's no barriers to access and it's available at all times, then we're going to make sure that the access looks rich in connection, meaning that my communication partners are modeling both what they're saying and what they think the AAC user might want to say. We sometimes see this pitfall of teams getting stuck into just academic curricular ask response types of situations where it's like, okay, now it's time for you to respond. So now I'm going to pull the device out and I'm going to make sure you have the characters of the book we just read programmed on your device. And so part of my teaching and coaching is, how do we use more descriptive vocabulary? How do we use core words? How do we use potentially gestalts that mean something to the child? How do we reduce yes, no questions, right? That are very partner driven, but might be difficult for an AAC user who doesn't have a lot of language yet to be able to say. Those are the strategies and implementation tools that I'm going to be focusing on. And then you also mentioned the thing that I wanted to add here as far as access to literacy. I still don't see enough teams recognizing that powerful tool that, you know, to me, first step is making sure they have a device and access to language. But the next key to unlocking autonomous communication is access to literacy. So I think if you've done the first thing, then the next step is making sure you have resources like Karen Erickson and David Copenhaver's Comprehensive Literacy for All. They have that book. It is life-changing if you haven't read it. Well worth the money. And then the tools that they have to support it. So comprehensiveliteracy.com, buildingwings.com, literacyforallinstruction.ca out of California. Like those websites, Jane Farrell, she's the one who does comprehensiveliteracy.com. Those are resources, give the structure, give the lesson ideas, give the background information for my staff to be able to be successful, to give them the tools to teach complex communicators how to think about and use pre-literacy and literacy topics to be successful.
And I think that's where sometimes people get stuck, is they're like, I got the device out, he's requesting snack. And it's like, well, okay, what's next? And you probably see this as well. I see oftentimes older students that they're like, well, we've tried reading and it didn't work. Well, you didn't try it in this framework with access to this device with these goals. And it's kind of looking at it in a different perspective.
And again, I think it's this mindset shift too of, I see this with stimming too. It's, oh, well, we tried it and it didn't work. And then it's like a stop. It's a full stop. And I'm like, but that's a lifelong skill. If we don't have it, then we never really can unlock what someone is thinking in their head. You know, I can program thousands of words onto a device, but if they don't have access to literacy, they can't truly tell me exactly what they're thinking. Yeah. What's their Starbucks order? Like, yeah. I don't know. What's, yeah. you know, what are they thinking about, you know, the show that they're watching on Netflix that I don't have programmed because it just came out this week, right? These are the things that they have to have access to literacy for. And so even if we've tried it, like you said, try something different. When something is going wrong, I always encourage my teams to think about, it's not the flower we're trying to make bloom, right? It's the water, it's the rocks around it. Like, we need to shift our style, our structure, our resources, our access, things like that, to give them the tools that they need to be successful. It's not them, right? Yes. And I think we oftentimes say, oh, it's them or it's the device. Let's switch the device, or mm-hmm. they just can't figure it out. And I think that is one of the biggest barriers we can run into.
And because, I mean, let's face it, it's easier to be like, oh yeah, let's swap the device, so let's do this, or nope, that's just not a skill they're going to get. It is harder, like objectively harder, to think about things outside the box and try something new. But I think that's such a great point that you made. Like, these are lifelong skills. We live in a text-rich world. And yeah, I mean, if someone didn't know my Starbucks order, I would be irritated. So we can't, it's also so time intensive to like program individual buttons. I remember when I first learned about core language, I was like, oh my God, well, how many years of my life did I waste like printing specific PEX pictures and programming specific buttons when I started teaching? It's not sustainable.
Yeah, same. And I think sometimes it can come across as really preachy when we talk about big concepts like this, right? Like, oh, you don't understand. Yeah. I have the background. I've done the mistakes. I get it. And that's why I think the best thing that you can have as a coach is someone who's done it. Tap into people that, you know, whether it be your SLP or whether it be the teacher down the hall that's been doing it a little bit longer or having some success, tap into the AAC user advocates that we can see on social media and that present nationally. There's podcasts, you know, there's so many resources we can tap into so that we can see it in action and recognize it. We're not just in our own little world on an island, even though it feels like it. And knowing that, you know, I made every single mistake you can make. So all of these things that I'm talking about come from a place of good-heartedness. And I do get it. I know how hard it is. I know that you've got 12 kids in a classroom, or, you know, you hardly slept last night because you're a parent and you have medical things that go alongside this diagnosis. And you can only take it in small steps as it comes.
Yeah. And it's worth it in the long run for everyone. And yeah, and I love that advice to just go out there and seek advice, because there are so many places now to get good advice from people.
And I think too, just that idea of when we unlock it well, communication is connection. That to me is why it's everything. That's why I will preach till the cows come home. That's why, like, yeah. I will work extra. I will help my staff make the visuals. I will go into the classroom as much as they want or need me to, because when we give them access, when we see their bodies calm down because they're regulated and they know they're going to be acknowledged and understood, it's not a one-off. It unlocks everything for both them and their communication partners. It reduces the stress of everybody in the classroom. So yeah. That's why it's so important, because it's not just a word or getting a need met. It's the connection piece.
And like, and which you just kind of touched on problem behavior too. I mean, so many teachers, that first high priority thing is problem behavior, which I get, because if it's dangerous or could cause injury, I understand the priority. But like, this is how you get here. Like, we could just name this episode like proactive interventions, because it is. It's going to help decrease any, you know, potentially dangerous behaviors. This is the avenue to get there.
Yeah. And as someone who works for a pretty large metropolitan school district, I can tell you I've seen when a student might transfer from an environment where they feel acknowledged and heard and understood, felt, and they feel regulated, and into a new environment, and then you see that dysregulation dramatically increase, and it puts everyone at risk. And so it's crucial. It's incredibly crucial. And I think that as much as we can possibly meet them where they are first, that's what has to come. So yeah, I totally agree.
So you brought up something a few minutes ago that I wanted to pick your brain on. You brought up stimming, and I want to talk about and have you explain like the connection between stimming and communication and why it's important for teachers and families to understand stimming through this lens.
So I think stimming in and of itself is right a big, big concept, and I have done multiple presentations on it, and I think that we can sometimes put it in a box like we do some of the other things we've mentioned, and that it becomes a way to gatekeep communication. So we say, oh, they're stimming on the device. It's not functional for them. They can't use communication. They just stim. And so then we remove access to the thing that they need the most. So when we talk about stimming, I think it's really important to first define stimming, which, you know, stimming is that ability or is that tool that someone might use to help them with regulation, but oftentimes it's seen as something perseverative or disruptive and not communicative. And so one of the things that we can do when we look at the connection between stimming and AAC is first understand what it is, but then also look at it more closely and ask this question of, instead of asking, well, how do I stop this? Really start getting curious and asking, what is this telling me? What is this action telling me? Whether it be someone perseverating on the same button on their device or multiple messages on their device, or let's say they script with their device, those things, those are questions we can ask and then get the answers from and then find more supportive solutions versus kind of pathologizing the behavior without really truly understanding where it's coming from.
I've heard that before, that comment you made, you know, they're stimming on their device and we're just going to take it away. And again, it's like the easier solution, but not looking at long-term goals. What do you say when teachers say that to you? Like, oh, you know, they're just stimming on their device, so I took it away. Because obviously that's a big conversation to have.
It is. And there's multiple reasons that someone might say it, right? First and foremost, they think it's not functional. So that's a piece of it. And then also it can be quite disruptive to their lesson, their planning, other students. So the first thing that we talk about is that the idea that it's maladaptive, right? It needs to be eliminated. We talk about, well, what strategies are in place for regulation? What does that look like? Do they have a sensory diet? Because if we're not regulated, that nervous system is going to use it as a tool, understandably so, to help with regulation. The other thing that we talk about is any predecessing behaviors or things that might be occurring before it happens, because also if we remove the device, they can't advocate to tell somebody that they're becoming dysregulated. So we look at, well, what does that look like? How are they communicating in those moments? Because if we don't have access to vocabulary, we are going to use universal communication, like behaviors, like gestures, like, you know, vocalizations, potentially self-harming, self-injurious, or injurious to other people behaviors, that because they don't have access to words. If we've gone through those things, I then start to talk to them about how stimming is an adaptive tool. And so if we then look at why, we answer those questions as to why. Is it that they're brand new to their device and they're exploring the pages of their device? We know that children babble. That's part of language development. So it could be that that is what's going on. They're trying to learn their device. Even if you hand a neurotypical child a device that doesn't have literacy in particular, they're going to explore it. They're going to say, oh, what does this mean? They're going to get that feedback. So that's an important learning tool. So that is one of the things that I tackle the most, is this is actually a learning tool. We just need to unlock why it's a learning tool and how they're using it. So the first, I usually frame it in four different types of behaviors that someone might be characterized as stimming. One is the exploratory behaviors or babbling. The second is if they really hone in on a specific word. I had someone I supported one time who just loved to say chicken nuggets. I mean, chicken nuggets was his jam. Chicken nuggets. If it was like a DJ, I'd be like chicken nuggets, chicken nuggets, chicken nuggets, chicken nuggets, right? And I think that giving that feedback of yes, making sure they're acknowledged, yes, making sure that they know what chicken nuggets means is so, so crucial. And then just as somebody who would be saying the word chicken nuggets using their mouth words would be doing, I would give that natural feedback of, oh, chicken nuggets is I love chicken nuggets too, but you know what? We can talk about that at lunch, right? We can talk about chicken nuggets, or we don't have chicken nuggets here right now. And then giving some modeling, giving some feedback, because sometimes that missing piece is that it's just not acknowledged at all. Mm-hmm. And acknowledgement is so crucial. I have 4 kids now, but at least 3 of them, because my youngest is not speaking yet, but 3 of them will say mom or a message to me until it is acknowledged.
For sure. Yes.
Right?
That's a great point.
So we have to make sure we're acknowledging them, and we have to give them that feedback, or they're just going to continue to say the message. Then, and then just making sure the second piece of that is acknowledging them and also modeling through the device. So if we acknowledge them, but then we just move on and we're not touching the device, we're not actually talking through the device. We're not using their language. So how are they expected, or how are we expecting them to be able to understand and use that language differently? The third is the idea of scripting or using delayed echolalia on their device, whether that be, I had one kid who was fast as lightning on their device, but would oftentimes go and script entire songs. I've heard of some kids scripting entire passages of the Bible or books, and it's really difficult to break them of that on their device. And so again, then they're like, well, the device is a distraction because they're only doing that one function on it, and they're not answering the questions I want them to answer. But I think, again, the more we understand that idea of gestalt language processing and hold apart learning and scripting and ways that we can acknowledge and shape that for the better, the more we can really support through the device versus it being this, again, an all or nothing idea of, well, either they use it functionally the way I want them to use it, or we pull it. I think that's huge.
I absolutely love that first firing up of the grill on a warm summer evening. Do you or someone else in your home take grilling as seriously as I do? The Burger Perfection Pack is an incredible deal for just $99.99. This exclusive package includes 20 of Omaha Steak's mouthwatering steak burgers. That's 4 of each of their finest burgers. Pure ground filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Only available at omahasteaks.com. Impress your next dinner party or family cookout with exclusive products not available at grocery stores. All backed by Omaha Steaks' 100% money-back guarantee. Get ready for grilling season with the mouth-watering Omaha Steaks Burger Perfection Pack, plus 8 free Wagyu Smash Burgers for just $99.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and as a bonus, use promo code YUM to get $35 off your order. That's $35 off with promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details.
You're on a GLP-1, but now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. Get access to trusted experts, food plans that work with your body, and habit coaching to keep you on track. Plus access to GLP-1 medication. Get started at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
And then there's the true, what I would call stimming or dysregulation piece of, I see their body, I see all the other things going on with them, and I can tell that right now is not an ideal time to communicate. Mm-hmm. I oftentimes use my children or my husband or somebody that is, we're in a heated argument, right? And I can see that it's just really not the right time. I need to take a step back because they're not hearing what I have to say. It's not an ideal time for learning. Neither of us are receptive. Those are the moments where I truly think it's stimming, and it might be looking at using either a light tech visuals where we have some picture supports, or just kind of holding off on teaching in general until I see that regulation piece is achieved. And then how do we achieve that, right? How is their sensory system regulated? What does their best look like? That's a good question to ask if you see someone stimming a lot, because oftentimes it's accompanied by this idea of, well, they're stimming and they don't want to communicate. And that is like one of those things that is nails on a chalkboard to me when someone says, oh, they don't want to communicate. Nothing motivates them. I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, people, non-speaking does not mean non-thinking. And I think that so much is going on underneath the surface, right? If we use that iceberg analogy. So it's just, you may not realize it, or they may not be wanting to communicate about what you want them to communicate, but it doesn't mean that they're not thinking things. It doesn't mean that they don't have things that could be motivating. We just haven't figured it out yet. So what does their best look like? That is a question I often ask my teams when they're struggling. Well, what does their best look like? And let's lean into that. Maybe we need to figure out ways to use things that are supportive when they're at their best in other ways.
That was so helpful to break down kind of your four like frameworks and think about our different strategies based on really being curious. Like, is this a sign of dysregulation? Is this exploring? Is this just like, hey, I want to talk about chicken nuggets? And how, if we're curious and spend time thinking about what is this kind of, you know, communication attempt trying to get at, that if we can pivot our strategies, we're likely creating a better environment for that learner.
And another strategy I will sometimes use if we're still hitting a lot of roadblocks is I will actually say to them, I don't care what they said on the device. Like, take that out for a second. I want to know what happens before or after. You know, in the ABA world, we talk about antecedents, right? Yeah. And consequences. And it's like, well, what's happening before and after? That tells me as much, if not more sometimes, as what is actually said on the device. And you'd be surprised at how many people have a hard time answering that question. And I think once we start to look at it from that lens and we're more observatory in our strategies and our log notes, then we can really start to see patterns emerge. And I think that can really be helpful in figuring out and problem solving and getting over some of these plateaus or back steps when we're having barriers with AAC success.
Yes, that's a really good point. And I liked how you oftentimes use an analogy of a child that is speaking, how would we respond? And I think that like is really helpful for me to think about, like, okay, yeah, if someone was just repeatedly saying chicken nuggets, what would I do? And I use that analogy sometimes when talking to parents or teachers that want to take away a device or change a button on a device. I'm like, you can't like tape someone's mouth shut. Like, if he was vocal, verbal right now, we couldn't just like press a magic button for this to stop. So same thing with this child.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think sometimes we'll say, oh yeah, I do that. But the other piece of it is, do they also have rich opportunities where you're modeling on the device things that are important to them? Mm-hmm. So if we're only giving access or we're only modeling things that we think they should be saying in the classroom or basic wants and needs that they have access to other ways to get right at home, it's not really meaningful for them. It's not intrinsically motivating. And so that's why that question of, well, what does their best look like when they're communicating with the device and you feel like you're seeing that connection and success? So it's both sides of the coin, right? It's making sure that we treat it as an extension of their voice and their mouth words or their oral speech, but also making sure that we are acknowledging it in a meaningful way and we're giving access to meaningful language to build the connection piece.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I was thinking about that. I'm like, if we're only using a device for like academic like questions, it's going to become aversive so quickly. Like, no, I want to talk about Minecraft, or I want to talk about bubbles. Like, I want to do something that I'm interested in, which is the same as we would do with another child.
And so much of that piece is, you know, a teacher, right? I think about the response. I'm always thinking, okay, well, what would a teacher say to me in that instance? And they would say, but I have to, Laura, I have to meet all of these criteria. And this is, you know, I'm doing ULS, or I have news to you, or unique, or something along those lines. And this is, I just don't have time to do all these other things that you're saying. So what oftentimes I will do in those situations is, well, let's embed Minecraft. Mm-hmm. Let me help you find some accessible videos or books about Minecraft, or maybe we create quickly using some resources on your PowerPoint slideshows, and we put it in Google Slides, and it's completely free. And now, instead of just having academic curriculum, we have academic curriculum with their preferred interest. How Love much that. Further would that go?
And so much more fun.
Yeah, for everybody, right?
Everyone,
yes. And again, like, you're learning too. I love watching my 7-year-old, almost 8-year-old loves Minecraft. And so anytime I talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, what is the zombie and what is that thing? Right.
I know, right.
When my teams are learning too, it becomes way more fun and that connection is naturally built.
Awesome. Well, Laura, I could just like chat about this forever, but we'll wrap up here because I know people can go to, where can people go to learn more from you?
So I do have an Instagram, AAC_innovations, where I share a lot of free content. And I kind of run the gamut because AAC is such a big topic. So I'll have things on there for beginners and for more advanced learning. And then I have a website, which is tinyurl.com/AAC innovations. I'm guessing these will probably be in the show notes too, but I have a lot of resources there. But I'm also, I can put a teaser out, I'm also going to be part of a few conferences this year where I dive way more into stimming. And it will, if you've seen me present on the topic before, it will actually have a new resource that I'm working on to help and be more supportive, because it's just kind of how I'm built. I want things that are practical and help in the weeds, right? If we're, what can be the most practical, useful tool for teams. So that is coming this year as well. So definitely follow me and kind of keep an eye out for those opportunities.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Well, I will add all of those links to the show notes. And thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum, everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.